Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Here's how author Andrew Krivak describes what it was like as a child to hear his grandmother telling stories about his grandfather in a language he didn't even fully speak.
My grandmother would tell stories about the old country, and my ears would perk up because I knew that there was something in there that I was told I would love. And the way she would tell it, too, you know, would be lots of Slovak that my mother would translate, and then, you know, just bits of English because she knew my brother and I were listening. And that kind of language itself, it almost just transcended the notion of, oh, it's in Slovak, it's in English.
Krivak is now an author telling his own stories. And his new novel, The Bear, is about a man and his daughter, both nameless, the last two humans on Earth. The book takes place on the shore of a lake at the foot of, quote, the mountain that stands alone, end quote. So we sent Radio Boston's Chris Siderick to Krivak's home in Jaffrey, New Hampshire, in the shadow of Mount Monadnock, to talk about the themes in the novel and hike up the mountain that inspired the setting.
Okay, I just see the summit right up there.
That, yeah.
You see that?
That's Andrew pointing through the thick gray clouds gliding across the jagged rocky Monadnock summit. You couldn't quite see the top of the mountain from his front yard, but luckily for me, Andrew was kind enough to row us out into the middle of Thorndike Pond to preview our ascent.
And when we go up there, those rocky ledges, you can just see. You'll see the pond, you'll see the roof of the house, and then as you drop down that saddle and head towards the summit, you lose it. You can just see the pond where we are now.
Yeah.
But everything else disappears. Oh. So cool.
I could have floated on the still, tranquil water all day, but we had a long walk ahead of us, and it was time to get started.
Pop that bumper out, which is just push it overboard. You get out first.
What had brought me here to climb this mountain with Andrew was an absolute gut punch from his book. A question I just couldn't shake. How do I give my kids what they need to continue their journey even after I'm no longer here to hold their hands and walk by their side? As Andrew and I began our climb, he told me that despite the big and sometimes heavy themes of the book, the novel was actually born out of a bedtime story.
So that's how it all began.
Yeah.
On the fly. Totally exhausted parent trying to come up with a story.
I have no idea what that feels like.
I know you know.
Over time, the story evolved. Andrew changed the main characters from a man and his son to a man and his daughter. But it still didn't feel quite right. And then one day, he was out in the middle of Thorndike Pond feeling like the only person left in the world.
And then I was out fishing one day and just looking around and thinking, what's it going to be like for the last two? And I thought, that's it. It's got to be the last two. That's the crux of the narrative.
After that, the rest of the pieces began to fall into place.
Once I realized it was the last two, I thought theologically it would be really interesting if the creation myth gives us the man first, the other side of that myth, it'd be fitting if a woman were last.
So he's created a story to bookend Adam and Eve. But for Andrew, humans are just one part of that story. Nature, which he calls the first actor, is the real protagonist. And he worries that sometimes people put so much emphasis on progress, our species' steady march forward, that we lose sight of our connection with the natural world.
And then forgetting that we've created a distance with nature.
That we just kind of accept it as the status quo?
The way it's got to be, not only just accept it as status quo and say, oh, isn't that terrible, but really, in some corners, just really thinking this is precisely the way it ought to be. We ought to be as far away from it as possible so that our lives can be better, easier, healthier, you know,
even the word civilized kind of.
More civilized, exactly. Yeah.
As we got closer to the summit, the trees became thinner and shorter, giving way to the broad, flat boulders that topped the mountain. We made our way out onto an open, rocky ledge at the foot of the summit, a place strikingly similar to one of the most powerful moments in the book, when the man takes the girl to see where her mother is buried.
Behind it was only sky, so that in profile the shape of that summit looked to her, too, like the head of a bear staring into the blue. And off to the side, as though on a shoulder of that head, she saw a cairn of rocks, on top of which was placed a large flat stone. She could feel her sweat cool as the wind pushed against her arms and chest, looked over at her father and pointed to the pile. He nodded, and they made those last strides together.
Those last strides together. So much of the book's power comes from what every parent knows, that someday we'll no longer be here, and our children will have to walk their own paths.
It's not my job to make them anything other than who they are. You know, it's my job not to get in their way. So, I mean, I think about my parents as well. I didn't realize this until my father had passed away, that he did a great job of never putting an obstacle in my way. And I am who I am as a result of it.
Sitting there on that rocky ledge, thousands of feet above the pond where we started, I thought about how, as a father of two boys, I feel that constant tension between this responsibility to prepare them to continue on after I'm gone, and at the same time, an overwhelming desire to shelter and protect them from a world that can be harsh and ugly. I asked Andrew how he thought about that struggle as a father himself, as he was writing the story.
Yeah, great question. I thought about it a lot, pretty much every time I sat down to write on the page. When the man is at the beach and he's looking out at the horizon and he's saying to no one, to everything and nothing, she's not ready yet. It's that tension of, I know I'm going to go, and she'll never be ready as far as I'm concerned, but he can't write her story for her.
As we began our descent, I asked Andrew, you wrote this book before the pandemic. If you were writing it today, would you change anything? And he surprised me when he said, no.
It's not about climate change. It's not about pandemics. It's not about human extinction. It's about a man who's heard stories, telling stories to his daughter, who finds a way to keep listening to stories and finds a way in which stories are told in ways other than her father told her.
You said kind of early on in the trail that, you know, that in this moment we're living, that someone will tell this story someday.
Yeah.
What do you think that's going to look like?
Yeah. I don't know. And that's funny. We're, you know, they talk about a beginning, a middle, and an end of story. We're right in the middle.
Yeah.
And who knows how the end goes? Someone's got to tell it. But I think about that a lot. And I also think that it's not our time yet to tell it to the end. Our time is now to live in it. We are in the middle.
Yeah.
And that's scary, exciting, beautiful, real, all those things.
Andrew sees humanity as part of a middle, too. The Earth was here long before us, and it will outlast us. Back on the shore of Thorndike Pond, where we started our journey, Andrew read an excerpt from the end of his story, a bear's reflection on the world after the last human has left this great green earth.
It had been night a long time when he emerged from the trees and lumbered into the clearing beneath a waning moon. He waded into the lake, drank, and came out, sat in the high grass and looked up at the stars. He felt the fatigue of his task as though he had come to a place where end and beginning were the same. And in the time he'd spent on that mountain, everything had changed. He lifted his ears to listen and heard nothing. No steps of animals, no whisper of trees, no snap of insects, no lapping waves. A silence as cold and strange to him as winter. He wondered how long he had been sitting there, if for just a moment the earth stood still, when the leaves of the forest began to rustle, and the ghostly wail of a loon floated across the surface of the water. He rose and stretched and turned, so that the great bear was over his right shoulder. Then he set out, moving west along the shore, the sky beginning to pale behind him,
like the world itself being born.
So that's, if you're talking about the ending, the end of humanity, but it's almost happy.
Well, yeah. I think what I was imagining was a way in which we could think about the existence of humanity as something that's part of stories. The flesh, as it were, dies. There are no more humans. But the story of humans is captured and lives on in here, in nature, in the animals, in the trees, in the very, you know, very water we've just been over. And to me, that seemed okay. You know, maybe that's what we need to think about if there's a sense of what's the climate mean to us? What does the environment mean to us? We should sort of let go of the hubris that we are the beginning and the end and just think of ourselves as part of the middle.
That was Radio Boston's Chris Sitterick speaking to author Andrew Krivak about his new novel, The Bear. You can see some pictures from their hike at our website, radioboston.org.